This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program for the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. Want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Walter Koenig, Chekhov from Star Trek, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Risk is our business.
It's like nothing we've dealt with before.
By golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day.
I can't change the laws of physics.
Now in standard orbit, sir.
Welcome, everyone, to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated podcast that covers the original and new cast of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. I am Ken Tripp.
And I am Zach Moore. And, you know, there's a lot of super powerful godlike beings in the original series. You know, it's a common trope of TOS. They would meet a super powerful being beyond our understanding on our physical plane, mere mortals can understand. And, you know, Kirk would usually outwit them and the Enterprise would go on to live another day. But what if these gods didn't just meet the crew of the Enterprise? What if they met each other? So what we're doing today is a little game called Last God Standing.
I like it. It's going to be the Battle of the Titans, so to speak, and it's going to be very interesting. This is a little bit different for Standard Orbit. We're very, you know, I guess Standard Orbit has its own little trope, doesn't it, Zach, right? We go down the lists and try to come up with the common themes or whatnot, and we go down the episodes and through the movies. We always have fun with it. But this is a nice twist. I like this. So each god will be rated as we go along. We're not going to do brackets. We're not going to screw around with that stuff. We're just going to go down the list. And as we get to this next one, can it beat the god before or not? And if it can, it moves on. If it doesn't, the other one moves on. So I love this concept. We're going to have some fun today.
Wouldn't it be easier, Ken, if we just put all the gods in a computer and it just decided who the best god was? You know, I think that would be a great, fair way to decide the champion.
I like that. Yeah. There's no meaning. There's no consequence. It's just
perhaps
it's
have
just
a coaches
an answer.
Poll, an AP poll. No, I'm just kidding. We're of course referring to college football, and they've since done away with the BCS. I'm glad we actually have a college football championship now, where the top 4 teams play each other. But that's neither here nor there. We're not here to talk about sports ball.
No, we're not. But I will ask you this question. Did you must have read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, right? Yes. No. Maybe.
47.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So now you have to build another computer to figure out how they got that number. So that's why I'm nervous. If we had the computer figure it out, we'd have to build another computer to figure out why this god was number one. So the hell with that. In the spirit of Samuel T. Coghlan, we're just going to do it by the numbers as if it's a book, no computer. We're going to figure this thing out.
All right, let's do it. So Where No Man Has Gone Before, which we talk about on every episode of Standard Orbit, it seems. But hey, it's my favorite episode. I'm not complaining. Gary Mitchell, he'd be our first godlike being on the original series. Now, he had quite a skill set. We saw him grow as time went on. So we don't know like what his limit would be. But his limit in Where No Man Has Gone Before was, you know, he could create something out of nothing, right? I mean, he created plants, and he could shoot energy bolts from his hands, and he could bend objects to his will. He made Kirk kneel before him, had some telekinesis powers that continued to grow and grow. Not indestructible, though. If he was struck by high energy, like a force field or another godlike being's electricity, he was susceptible to that, and that knocked his ESP powers. How ESP goes to that, I'm not too sure, but that's beside the point. You know, because he could see other things. Like, he could see when the engines were degrading, or he could see across the compound he was in and strangle Kelso with that cable. So he did have an impressive skill set, but when his powers were affected by high energy, he could get, you know, turned mortal, and that's why Kirk could eventually kill him and crush him with a rock. So he wasn't, he was quite powerful,
yeah,
but not invulnerable.
With a little help from Dr. Denner, right?
Right.
Let's be fair. So, yeah, I hear you. It was one of those things where if gone unchecked, and I guess we kind of saw that a little bit of Gods and Men, that fan film that was made where he did go unchecked, right, and just developed an empire. But yeah, it was an interesting characteristic to develop, and it was wild watching the powers expand. And kind of like we saw with TNG when Q offered Riker that opportunity, you could start to see how you start going from friend, coworker, subordinate officer to equal, then superior, and then more and more and more. They're like, you know, they're like flies to us. So
absolute power corrupts, absolutely.
I've heard that once.
So you brought up a Gods of Men. Charlie X would be the next godlike being and our first opponent here. This is our first, you know, Dukeru here
dun,
on
dun,
Battle
dun.
Of the Gods. So Charlie X versus Gary Mitchell. Now Charlie X, similar powers, you know. Actually, these episodes, just brief aside here, these episodes aired back-to-back. They were produced several months apart, actually, because Where No Man Has Gone Before was the second pilot, and Charlie X was, you know, in the initial order of episodes. But broadcast, Charlie X was the second episode broadcast, and Where No Man Has Gone Before was the third episode broadcast of the original series. So, like, if you're a viewer in the 60s, you're like, does this happen every week, right? This is very
That's
similar
right.
to what just happened last week, so...
Yeah, so if you're comparing Charlie X to then, as a child who was developing, I guess, and didn't have the maturity to control the powers that he was given, because he was human, and, you know, this race came along, saved him, whatever, and the only way they knew how was to kind of endow them with the powers that they had.
And he was supposed to be a teenager, right?
He was.
Because he looked like all teenagers do on television, about 30 years old, but...
Really? You didn't think he looked younger than that?
I mean, I'm 30 now, and I still don't look that old, so... But maybe that's just me. It's all in the genes.
You can't help it, right? When you're that good-looking, Zach, you just got to deal with it. But I would say Charlie X, to me, it was funny. I always thought it was played by Patrick Duffy, too. I thought he was a dead ringer for Patrick Duffy. I don't know why.
I can see that. I can see Charlie X walking out of the shower.
Yeah, it was all a dream, baby. But anyway, how do we get these references? So... Anyway, let's do our first Dukeru here. Charlie X versus Gary Mitchell. Who would win?
Well, it's tough because, you know, you were talking about his power set. He's kind of like the little kid from It's a Good Life in the Twilight Zone, the Bill Mooney. He's a kid who has power that little kids should not have. And he does. He's not malicious, at least at first. He's not really malicious. He's just kind of acting out. And these things happen, like, he, you know, and because he's not in full control of his powers, like he goes too far with it and regrets some things that he's done. But man, what are you gonna do? A big thing though, and this is why I make the Twilight Zone connection. He like wishes people away, you know, to the cornfield, if you will, you know, as they call it
right.
in the Twilight Zone. He wishes people away, and they just disappear, and that's real creepy. That's a real creepy concept. So Gary Mitchell didn't seem to have that kind of power. I mean, he had other more tangible powers, but, you know, Charlie had, you know, more intangible things. And I would say, look, if Gary got on Charlie's bad side, Charlie would just wish him away, and that would be in the Gary Mitchell. What do you think, Ken?
Here's where I differ with you. I think that because Gary Mitchell is a trained Starfleet officer and much more mature, that he would be able to manipulate Charlie. You know, kind of get him on his side, that type of thing, and then... He could do what he want because Charlie was mortal in the sense that I think he could be killed. There was nothing that indicated to me, like, if they shot him with a phaser, it wouldn't work. If he saw you running, trying to get the phaser, he could disable it, burn it, make you disappear. So that is kind of why I kind of tip it to Gary Mitchell. I think he'd be able to use his brains a little bit and kind of outfox Charlie and get him before Charlie got him. That's my thought process.
That's a good point because Kirk shoots Gary with the phaser rifle and does nothing. So
nothing.
And if someone did shoot Charlie with a phaser, it probably would at least stun him. They just didn't want to do that because, you know, he's going to wake up eventually and be really angry. So
yeah. That's for sure.
Now, you mentioned the fan film of Gods and Men. I have not seen that. Can you have? They didn't mm-hmm. Gary Mitchell and Charlie X fight in that fan film? And if so, who won?
I believe that Charlie X wound up winning. He was at first the antagonist at the beginning, and then, you know, when the future was changed dramatically and Gary Mitchell was kind of running the galaxy in an alternate universe or an alternate timeline, hint, hint, you know, they kind of square off in front of the Guardians Forever. And I believe that Charlie X pulled it off.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But now, at this point, Charlie was an adult.
Right, I mean, his full faculties of his powers and all that, yeah.
It was a mature Charlie X versus, you know, Gary Mitchell. And I think that was the difference. So that's why I'm sticking with Gary Mitchell.
All right, well, Gary Mitchell moves on. Sorry, Charlie.
Sorry, Charlie. I like that. Yeah, no pun intended.
So the next godlike being on our roster here would be Trelane, the Squire of Gothos himself. Now, Trelane, again, kind of a vague power set, because when the crew first meets him, he seems to be this omnipotent being. But then they do some deductive reasoning, and they figure out that his power is being augmented by a machine. Now, they initially think, oh, that's the source of all his power. Let's destroy this machine, and then, you know, we're good. We'll get out of here. Not the case. It was just helping him. I'm not really sure how that worked exactly, but it's, you know, it's far beyond our understanding, Ken. I'm mere mortals. But this machine, it's like the training wheels to godhood, is what Trelane had on Gothos there. And he was very powerful as well. Now, as fanon and, you know, fan explanations and fan fiction and actual official Star Trek fiction has gone on to say, Trelane could be interpreted as a member of the Q continuum. So he would be a Q, but he's also young. So he's got the youth working against him, just like Charlie X did. Quick to temper tantrums, as we see. You know, I mean, Kirk just slaps him. You know, so that's a funny image. So I would, you know, thinking about that. Although Trelane was very powerful, I think to your point about Gary Mitchell being a trained Starfleet officer, I think he would have the advantage here, even though Trelane did have incredible power. I mean, he could make things from nothingness just like Gary Mitchell could. He could move planets around, but who's to say Gary Mitchell couldn't move planets around as time had continued and if he hadn't been killed by Kirk? So, I don't know. I think the maturity thing would go to Gary Mitchell, would give him the advantage. But, you know, Trelane could freeze people in place, like, you know, wax figures. So if he did that to Gary Mitchell, then he could do whatever he wanted with him. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Trelane's powers? It's tough. They match up.
It is
well.
A tough one, man. They do. They, first of all, I love Trelane. He's one of my favorite characters of all time. And, you know, Q was directly pulled from Trelane. There is no doubt about it. I don't think there's anything that you can find in any books that says so or whatnot, but you go back to Squire of Gothos and then you watch the very first episode of TNG. It's like, come on. You know, even the whole thing about, you know, wanting to have a duel. I mean, he was just having a blast. And I think that you're right, though. I think that Gary Mitchell could, if Kirk could outfox him to a degree. Now, I know his parents come and take him back and all that other stuff, but I do believe that Gary Mitchell would find a way to kind of outwit and take advantage of a young Trelane. Now, you know, if Trelane came back in a few years, just like Charlie X came back in a few years, it'd probably be more of a fair fight. But I'm going to say that they both have the same powers, probably from the same source. And maturity and training outduel my buddy Trelane.
But the one thing you're missing, Ken, is what if Trelane's parents get involved?
Well, I'm not missing it, because that's not how we set this up. But if you throw that in there, oh yeah, they win. If they are Q, or whatever that race was before Q existed, then Gary's toast.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the phone a friend thing's not really an option in the last God standing here, and you got to fight your own battles.
Can't have your parents fight them for you.
That's right. So no. Trelane loses, Gary wins, so. Sorry, Trelane.
Bye, Trelane.
Mitchell lives to fight another day, and who is he fighting next, Ken, but the Metrons, or the Metrons, according to Captain Kirk's pronunciation. they are, you know...
Don't make fun of Canadians.
Well, the thing about the Metrons is we don't really know a lot about them, you know, their skill set. They seem to be... based off their physical appearance, like they're like this Greek kind of statue brought to life, you know. they could freeze spaceships. They could transport people across the stars. They could do a lot of things. But I don't know. I mean, what's your take on what they could do and how they would match up against Gary Mitchell?
I think it's too ill defined. We just don't know what their capabilities are beyond the fact they could stop ships, they could blow up another ship, and they could move people back and forth. Their scope and power is limited, it seems, to that area of space. I don't know if, you know, they never really returned there. So I think in this case, it's kind of, we don't have enough information. And by default, Gary just keeps going.
They are a race of beings. That would be the only thing. But I mean, if you're going to, you got to send your best warrior, you know, like back in the old, in the Greek days, right? They would send, who's your best warrior? And I'm going to send my best warrior. And whoever wins, wins the battle. So that's what we got to do here. We can't have a whole like fleet of Metrones fighting Gary Mitchell. They send the best Metrone, the Metron, send him out there. He fights Gary Mitchell. Gary Mitchell would probably win. So I mean,
I think so.
He's so wiping the floor that, right now, Gary Mitchell.
Oh yeah, I can't believe this. But because you know, obviously this is as we go, and it's you know, I just want everybody to know out there too. This is not subjective. This is fact. So you know, I'm just kidding. So with the Metrons in particular, though.
Metrons, yeah.
Metrons, yes. Sorry, I'm south of the border here. The one, like I was saying before, we really don't have a ton of information to go on. But I think one of the things that tips it towards Gary Mitchell a little bit more is if the Metrones, whatever you want to say, wanted to expand their power, authority, and grasp of the galaxy or even a few more solar systems, they could do it at will. And they don't. Whereas I find Mitchell, you know, it seems to me as his power grows, he gets more hungry, he wants more. I could just see, you know, two opposites here, a very powerful force that maybe the Metrones could not stop if Mitchell was involved, just because of that eagerness to expand that power base. My thoughts.
There you have it, Gary Mitchell, wiping the floor.
Wiping the floor.
With these other gods, God's little g, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The next one we would have on our list would be the Organians, from Mariner Mercy. The Organians, they don't even seem to exist on a physical plane. This is something me and Justin Oster talked about in depth in 179, I Had Your Sash, just a couple episodes back. And that's something I couldn't really wrap my head around. Like, what are these Organians all about? Do they live in this simple life on a regular basis? Do they only take these avatars for our own, you know, mortal understanding? You know, it's very vague what they could do. But they were powerful enough to stop all hostilities between the Klingons and the Federation. Ships, person-to-person combat. I mean, that is a very powerful act of power.
Powerful
to be repetitive.
Power.
Yes, I like that, quotable, yes. Right there. So that is wide spanning. So I mean that, but just because your power reaches a long way doesn't mean it's necessarily, you know, if one-on-one combat here, that's not going to help you, because I mean the guy you're fighting is right in front of you. So the range of your attacks doesn't really matter if you're, you know, in the same arena, so to speak. So, you know, and they turn into like balls of energy at the end, and then that we never hear from them themselves again chronologically in Star Trek. Of course, there's an Enterprise episode about them, but we didn't really learn much more about what they are on a regular basis outside of these observers, and then that if they, of course, you know, become, you know, pure energy, as Spock says. So I'm not sure. I mean, if they are pure energy, that's something hard to fight as far as Gary Mitchell goes. So if they're fighting Gary Mitchell, what are your thoughts on how he stacks up against the Organians?
I think the Organians are a lot like the Metrones. They're evolved, right? And that's kind of, as we know from the Metrones that they have evolved over time. And the Organians, you know, I mean, although they think the Empire and the Federation won't be friends for 5,000 years or something, some crazy number, that they were once human and they evolved too, and they evolved to pure energy, right? And that's where it gets tricky. And I think for the conversation we're having, it would be tougher to take on a race like Organians, where you can't have a one-on-one, and say, okay, would the Organians beat Mitchell? Okay, would their best warrior? Well, they're peace-loving people, and that might be their downfall. And kind of like the Metrones, it's really hard because they seem very, you know, apathetic to all things until you know, they look at things and they go, oh, well, you know, we don't want you to fight anymore, so we'll just heat up your starship so you can't touch it. And even though the Klingons supposedly, you know, slaughtered dozens of them, they're like, no one died. So I don't know. They seem to exist on a different plane. So I don't even know if they could quote unquote fight in this dimension. It's just a little tricky for me to get my arms around. And although I'm tired of Gary winning all the time, I don't know if we kept bringing this forward, how would we take on the Organians to anyone else? Because it's a whole race of people, kind of like the Metrons. So
yeah.
I'm going to say Gary Mitchell, being a conniving, you know, somehow or another turns their balls of energy into ice or something and does terrible things to them with a spoon. That's my thought.
That's an interesting visual image. But moving on to who mourns for Adonai, I've heard it pronounced many ways.
Now we got a battle.
Much
now
like Metrons and Metrons, I've heard that pronounced many ways. But yes, Ken, we do have a true battle here. I think we have a good matchup here because Apollo has been doing this for millennia. Now, he is super powerful of his own right, but he does use his temple, much like Trelane uses his machine, to augment his powers. I don't know how much of that augmentation he really needs. I mean, he's seems to be quite capable of you know, doing godly things without it. Just say the machine gets destroyed. Yes, Apollo leaves at the end. He fades away, but that's because he's like, well, I guess humans don't want me after all. It's not so much that, like, he was, you know, truly defeated. I mean, he could have gone on if he wanted to, but he kind of lost the will to keep on going after he saw his last chance for humanity to worship him. They had scorned him. So that's why he left. So I don't know. This is a good one. They got the lightning bolts working there. You know, I mean, Apollo can get much bigger. He can increase his size, so he could, you know, step on Gary Mitchell, maybe. You know, so I think this is a really good fight.
I think Apollo would win this battle, and the reason I think is for the reason that Gary's been winning all along. Apollo has been at this for thousands and thousands of years. He knows the human mind, knows the human heart. I think that he would use his experience to undermine. I think Gary seems to have a few more powers. That's where it gets a little scary. And we don't really know what Gary's source is. You know, we don't know if he gets pulled further and further away from the border of the galaxy. If that would impact him or not. But I think in this case, I'll take, you know, that old, there's an old expression, right? That old age and treachery beats youth and inexperience 6 days a week and twice on Sunday. I'm going to take the old age of Apollo in this and find a way to outwit Gary Mitchell and put Apollo on top. That's my.
So you think that Gary Mitchell would lose his strength if he moved further away from the edge of the galaxy?
I don't know, but because we don't know the source of it. We just know that it was in Delta Vega, right? Mm-hmm. And it was on impulse power, so it wasn't far, far away.
Well, Delta Vega is a moon of Vulcan. Can we all know that?
We do know that. Yeah, I don't. That is the largest orbit of any moon in the galaxy, by the way.
Interesting. But I thought it was all internal, but you're right. You never do know. So you never do know.
And because the Enterprise doesn't warp away, it limps to Delta Vega. That means it's still very close to that area. And whatever it is that has given him this power or this power source, you know, maybe it fades with distance. We don't know. And if, obviously, the crew of the Enterprise were not going to take that risk. And that's why he was killed where he was. But that's why I think that Apollo, though, would... It has nothing to do with the. We'll say for argument's sake that Gary Mitchell's powers do not decline with any distance. That Apollo would use his history. I mean, he's a demigod. No, he's a god, and he's, you know, he's been in many wars and battles and so forth. And I would think that he would be able to take on Gary Mitchell.
Yeah, Clash of the Titans, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite literally.
So. Adieu, Gary. You got through all of these season one gods. As we get to season two, Apollo is our new champion. So yeah, this is interesting here because, I mean, there's a couple of beings that you could maybe consider godlike beings. Like there's Vol, but he's just a machine on a planet, so we pass him up, you know.
Bye, Vol. And David Soul.
Yeah. 60s Owen Wilson, yes. There is the companion from Metamorphosis. I mean, but just
more of a being, not
more
a
like,
god.
More like Casper the Friendly Ghost, the companion, the friendly godlike being.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as much of a trope as it was in season one, there's really, you know, looking at it, Kenny, you tell me, man. I don't think there's any more of these guys in season two other than Apollo, but you tell me.
No, I think you're right. I was looking, you know, Wolf in the Fold, which is kind of a spirit, and it's not a god. It's a presence. It's almost like, you know, like a parasite type of thing. So it moves from place to place. So as I look through the episodes, no, there really isn't anyone else or any other god that we encounter that would be much of a competition for old Apollo there.
Yep, I agree. So the next one would be in season three. Here's a good one. The Gorgon from And the Children Shall Eat. The friendly angel. He has the power to bring out your greatest fear and paralyze you and then cause madness and hysteria. So that's a pretty powerful power, I would say. Does he need children to recite a nursery rhyme for him to get it done? That's the real question.
Yeah, he's kind of Apollo-like, where he needs the, I don't know if it's the worship is the right word, but that's what pulls him in. And then he convinces the childrens to use the power that he gave them, right, essentially, to control and make the crew do things or, you know, turn the ship around and all that other stuff. And, you know, can actually convince the crew that they're saying one thing and another. So it's different. It's almost like a bag of tricks, so to speak. I don't know if there's a lot of energy and power in that, but that is a very powerful weapon. If you can control someone's mind, it's pretty debilitating, you know?
Would that ability affect Apollo, right? I mean, because if the Gorgon could turn that on Apollo and make him see his greatest fear, what chance would he have? I don't know. I mean, I'm hesitant to say this guy can beat Apollo, but you know, you play these mental battles. That's a pretty powerful battlefield right there, the mind. So,
well, yeah, you don't know what you're fighting. You don't even know what your enemy is, right? And so it's like I said, there probably isn't a more powerful weapon than the ability to manipulate someone's head and to get them to move into a direction they do not see. And you know, it's kind of you know, like Jedi mind tricks, right? You could just keep screwing with the guy until he just goes nuts. Now, would he have that authority or ability over Apollo? I guess that's really the trick, not being the greatest, person with a ton of knowledge on Greek mythology and what Apollo was capable of. It's a tough one. I would have to believe that Apollo would be able to thwart it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder. I don't know the skill set, the power set of all the Greek gods. I mean, I'm sure he's dealt with some tricksters in his time. So I'm gonna give Apollo, you know, the benefit of the doubt there, because I just like him better than the Gorgon, right? So
yeah, why not? Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, he's better dressed than the Gorgon.
Well, the toga or the shower curtain, right? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, well,
Apollo definitely pulls it off better than the Gorgon did, right?
He certainly did. He didn't pull it off at all in Star Trek Continues, but he pulled it off very well. I think he was in the Pilgrim or something like that. I don't know.
Pilgrim of Eternity, yes. Excellent premiere episode of Star Trek Continues. So Apollo moves on past the Gorgon, the friendly angel. No need for nursery rhymes moving forward. So that's a relief.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to hear you kind of sing it through. But anyway,
we move on. So we have the Mokoshins from Spectre of the Gun. Again, these guys, they are a race of beings, much like, you know, we're talking the Organians, we're talking about the Metrons. So very xenophobic as well, much like the Metrons. They don't want people messing around in their space. So the Enterprise continues. They presses forward in their territory, and they have here's the deal. Did the events of Spectre of the Gun happen or not, right? Was that all in their heads, or did they actually go somewhere and all that stuff happened to them, and then they were transported back? Because the episode, it's kind of vague about that, so I think that would impact, like, it's another, like, mental battle, right? It's all, like, did nothing real of that happened at all. So again, they're similar to the Gorgon in the fact that it's all mental stuff. You know, they're not shooting lightning bolts at you. They're not making things appear out of nowhere. But that's where we got. So I don't know. I'm matching up against Apollo. What are your thoughts, Ken?
Apollo wins, I think Malkoshian's just used illusions, which is a great weapon in of itself, but it's not a real great strength. And the crew is able to figure it out. You know, they turn their mindset differently, or have Spock, tell the crew what is real, what is not real, and you know, if they don't believe they're dying, they don't die. So it didn't seem like it was that. I thought it was very clever, by the way. I thought the plot in this was very good. I liked this episode very much, and I thought it was very, very unique. But they are able to they are able to thwart the Malkoshian's, you know, desires here anyway. I mean, Noah's kind of a good versus evil type thing, but as soon as they get through that, it's over. You know, there was nothing else. They say, okay, you figured us out. Now we can be friends. I don't know. I think Apollo would kick their butts.
All right. Well, there it is. So let it be written. So let it be said. Sorry, Malkoshian. Apollo moves on. So the next one, again, we could talk about this one. We could not. There's Day of the Dove. You know, the little pinwheel that flies around. He's kind of like the companion, you know. But his power was making people fight each other, really? And if it's just Apollo, he's not going to fight himself, right? So...
Yeah, and he just flies off, right? I mean, if Apollo punched it, it would just be punching through air, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then we move on to Plato's stepchildren. Now, these are some corporeal guys, right? Some human beings with some powers. What are your thoughts on these guys, Ken?
Oh. I don't like to think about this one at all, to be honest with you. But I don't know. I think that this is, again, it's mostly mind control. Could they get in the head of Apollo and make him do things against his will? That's really the challenge, I think. And this is where it gets a little tricky, because we are dealing with a god again, and that's all it is. It's the ability to manipulate. They don't make things appear, disappear. They don't have, you know, like Apollo got bigger and stronger and more powerful. These guys are just manipulative. So I guess the question is could they get into Apollo's head and destroy him internally? Because that would be the only way they could win.
Again, I come back to the fact that they're corporeal.
They are corporeal.
They're just beings that learned, you know, to use their powers based off, you know, the atmosphere of the planet and the plants or whatever it was, right? That gave them the power specific to that planet. So I don't know. They have a unique... weakness in that fact that would those powers not wear off, right? Because Kirk and them all got the powers in the episode, so it would wear off. So if, you know, Apollo just outlasted them, I don't know how long that would be, right? But he could outlast them because he's a god, he's immortal, right? So that would wear off, and then, you know, he would easily defeat them.
Okay, I'm with you.
So Apollo moves on, which brings us really to, best I can tell, the Savage Curtain, the Excalibians. Ken, Yarnek and all those guys down there, they want to know the difference between good and evil. Rock creature, pretty cool design, but one of the coolest of all these guys. He's the coolest looking wannabe god, and they don't pretend to be gods or anything like that. Cool creature. Again, it's about illusion. They can resurrect dead characters, dead figures of history, stuff like that. Could they theoretically create a whole army to fight Apollo, right?
Yeah. And going into Apollo's head, they could pull out Apollo's enemies, right? The most powerful, the whoever he fears. And beat them that way. And we do know, well, because none of the actual living participants in this die, right? It's the people that they think about that are brought to life, Sarek and others, that they get killed, or he's probably the only one that gets killed now that I think about it. It's a tough one. But I really like the Excalibians. I do. I think they are they're a neat race. And, you know, they kind of go from, I guess, from a subtle rock to a living rock.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of cool. It's everything that Star Trek V was missing. They definitely have the ability to do some pretty cool things, and I would imagine that they have more powers than we're aware of, just because they can do that, right? And they allow them to beam up. They allow them to do all kinds of things. It's just hard to say, do they have the strength and the power of an Apollo? It's not really demonstrated. They can create, but can they fight? You know, if you were just to fight one of them, would that be the way to look at it? I mean, they're exceedingly hot. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's tough because Gary Mitchell swept through so many, and now the Apollo swept through so many. I feel like I don't want to default to those guys, but you know they are probably the most powerful two of all these guys. Ken,
I think so. I think so. I just don't. Yeah, I agree. The you know, it all depends, I guess, on their ability to get into the heads of either Mitchell or Apollo, and that would be the way to defeat them. But as far as, you know, powers and strength and, you know, lightning bolts or big green hands that can crush starships, it's really hard to beat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't even talk about that ability, you know? I mean, with Apollo having, you know, crushing starships, regardless of any of these other beings, you know, we talked about people with other ships and other races, like the Mokoshans, right? If they came around their ship, he would just reach up and crush that probe or anything like that. So he has some serious astral projection telekinesis power there going on there. So
oh, he does, yeah. That's and you know, he was holding the Enterprise at bay while doing a lot of tricks on the surface too, and growing to big heights and creating storms. He's a pretty powerful guy,
right?
I'm God, sorry.
Well, there's small one G. Last God to talk about, or wannabe God, truly presenting himself as God, and that is the God being from Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. Now, if this guy can get taken out with a photon torpedo, I'm going to say Apollo will wipe the floor with him, Ken.
Absolutely, but I hope he does. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, that God was not as powerful as we thought, even when his lightning bolt eyes or whatever, I mean, he didn't kill Spock and McCoy. I suppose he could have, but he didn't. And even when he shoots at the rock, very little damage is done. That's for probably budgetary purposes. And he can't shoot well at all. He shoots like a stormtrooper because he had Kirk dead to rights in the shuttle. So I would just say from a warrior point of view, yeah, Apollo would win.
Well, there we have it. You know, there's really no other godlike beings, and no Kelvin timeline godlike beings. And I'm maybe, you know, if we get some more Kelvin timeline movies, maybe they will encounter a being like a Trelane or a Charlie X or something like that along the way. I think that would be interesting. I know a lot of people were thinking about maybe you know, when John Harrison or Benedict Cumberbatch's character could have been, you know, a Gary Mitchell back, you know, because he's wearing a Star Trek uniform. He's wearing a Starfleet uniform. He's in the brig there. Looked very similar to where No Man Has Gone Before. I know there was a lot of speculation about that. That would be cool. It would be a different kind of challenge for the crew of the Enterprise instead of just another, you know, alien guy with a spaceship or a fleet or a big powerful ship or something like that, having to outwit them. You know, I mean, that's how Kirk and the Enterprise crew were able to defeat all these gods or wannabe gods, if you will. You know, outsmarting them, giving them the test of divinity, and then failing every single time and then being able to defeat them. So I would like to see that in one of the Star Trek movies. You know,
yeah, it would be interesting. I think that premise is, you know, as we talked about this episode, It seemed like a very common trope, and it wasn't. It was definitely in the original series to some degree and in one movie, but it wasn't that common. But let's do something really sneaky, Zach. Let's go over here, peek over this wall here, and that guy over there, Q. Think Apollo could take him out?
I don't know, man. You got to kind of give it to Q, don't you?
I think you have to give it to Q. I think that a mature Trelane probably would have had a good chance against Apollo and mm-hmm. a good chance against Gary Mitchell. But Q, yeah.
Q is Trelane without the training wheels. He doesn't have the machine helping him out, you know? So
yeah, he seems to be the Superman of the gods. There just is no limit. You know, he's moving planets. He's sending starships all across the galaxy. He can show up in the Delta Quadrant, any quadrant. He's just all over the place, so... Yeah, I just thought it would be fun to peek over here since, you know, it doesn't look like any of the three of the guys from Earl Grey are around. I just figured I'd ask the question. But you got to keep it down because if they hear us, they'll get mad.
Well, I'm happy to say that Apollo is the winner here. If one of these guys are going to be the champion, you know, I think he looks the part, definitely. You know, he's, you know, I'm proud to say that he's the last god standing here, Ken.
He is the last god standing and well-deserved, and congratulations to Apollo. So, as it is said, let it be done. If you have any comments in the Babel Conference or you think we're wrong, you're wrong. I'm just kidding. I like to have fun. No, I you know, this is a very interesting topic, and I'd be curious, too, what people feel about this. And I think it could be a fun conversation to have. You know what I mean? I think not only do I want to hear it in the Babel conference, I'd love to hear a round table on this and just get some feedback on it and see, you know, they're always looking for good topics for the round table. There's a good one. Who's the most powerful godlike being in all of Star Trek?
Yeah, you know, if they had a true bracket system for that one, maybe you got your TOS bracket, your Next Generation bracket, your Deep Space Nine bracket, your Voyager bracket, you know, I think Enterprise. I don't know if Enterprise introduced any. They weren't already in existence, you know, previously. Like, you know, the Organians were in there, but they were, you know, in the TOS bracket. So that might be an interesting way to do it. You know, get your Final Four kind of situation going on there. Get your brackets handed out, guys. That might be fun. But yeah, it's been fun talking about the gods of Star Trek here on Standard Orbit this week. And that's not the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM. Here's a quick look at what else you might have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, the Orb.
It's kind of weird if you walk into Picard's ready room and, you know, a sad John Mayer song is playing.
Exactly. Or if he was listening to Jewel. You know, that would be really, really unexpected.
Oh, man, that's bringing it back right there. I can totally see him listening to the Pieces album.
To the journey!
But imagine how much his big black eyes would have popped if he was wearing the blue face paint.
That is true.
Like a bullion. I didn't realize the bullions were Scottish, but, you know.
Bullions could be Scottish.
Meta Treks.
Trip is just absolutely fascinated with the pan-fried catfish that this replicator can make, and Archer doesn't want anything to do with it. He's pushing back against it. He doesn't trust.
What is it, like a Trojan catfish or something?
The ready room.
And then that makes you wonder, what does the Federation do when a member world shifts in that way and starts to take on characteristics that go against the foundation of the Federation charter in the first place?
Yeah, is there some sort of process for like removing a world from the Federation? If they go too far from Federation norms and values and ideals.
I think so. I think they hold a Fexit vote. Exactly. They decide that they are going to leave the Federation.
Yeah.
This is Stratos, though. It might be a Strexit vote.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. If you're an Apple user, get the show on iTunes or the Apple Podcasts app. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Speaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well.
If you'd like to get in touch with us here at Trek FM, you can always find us on trekfm/contact and look in the sidebar on the show page, or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm and please leave us a voice message. You can also contact us through Twitter at TrekFM or on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And of course, in the Babel Conference, type Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at TrekFM and click discussion on the menu bar. Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron on the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/TrekFM, that's patreon.com/TrekFM, you'll find the current goals and different milestone contributions along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details on patreon.com/TrekFM. Speaking of Patreon, thank you as always to our great associate producers for Standard Orbit. We have Renee Roberts, Norman Lau, Aaron Harvey, Tim Robertson, Nick Anastasio, Richard Marquez, and Corey Elrod.
Yes, thank you guys so much for your support for both Standard Orbit and Trek FM. So Ken, if people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
Hey, you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference and engaging people when I have the opportunity. You can also find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @BostonSCPO, and we like to tweet out all our new episode information as soon as we get it, as well as our colleagues. So look for me there.
As for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. And I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman series from the early 2000s. And you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And join us again next time here on Trek FM for another episode of Standard Orbit.